I have to talk to Senator Vickerman again for a minute. Senator Sparks, why don't we start with your bill, Senate File 167.
Yes, there is. It was amended.
And Senator Frederickson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Are we supposed to read this?
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 167 in front of you today. We have been to three other committees, but certainly want to have a chance to visit with the Finance Committee here today. For those of you new members, which on this committee, there's not a lot. This is the same bill that we passed in the Senate last year, 62-0. Senator Anderson carried this legislation, the unemployment insurance bill. It hit a little snag in the House and wasn't able to move forward. The bill is a consensus product of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, made up of several groups, the AFL-CIO, the Teamsters, the State Chamber of Commerce, National Federation of Independent Business, Mechanical Contractors Association, Legal Aid. The bill is overall totally cost neutral. With me today, Mr. Chair and members, is Lee Nelson, the Unemployment Insurance Legal Affairs Director. And with that, I would turn it over to Mr. Nelson.
Chairman, members of the committee, as Senator Sparks has indicated, this bill was up last year, was carried sponsored by Senator Anderson last year. It got hung up in the House on the floor for reasons totally unrelated to the contents of this bill. This bill, I'll just point out about three or four highlighted sections. What this bill does is provide expanded coverage for new labor market entrants by providing what's called an alternate base period. So that what that means is the most recent work can be counted towards establishing a claim for unemployment benefits. We feel this will positively impact about 2,400 people a year who currently have worked long enough to qualify, but they haven't worked in the right period of time. They would simply have to wait until a quarter changed to currently collect. This bill would say that if they don't immediately qualify, they could use the most recent calendar quarter to qualify for benefits. The biggest single thing this bill does is provide a change in how deductible part-time earnings are handled. Currently, after a certain point in time, there's a dollar-for-dollar deduction on part-time earnings when you're collecting unemployment benefits. That provides a disincentive to work part-time because you have to certainly pay taxes and other things on those earnings. So what this would do is provide an incentive to continue to work part-time while collecting benefits. We feel this will positively impact 20,000 people a year who are working part-time to provide them with an incentive to continue to work part-time, and part-time jobs often develop into full-time jobs, and it also is good for the labor market to fill part-time positions. This bill also provides for a special exception for people who quit employment due to a child care problem. Currently, if you have a child care problem and you happen to quit, you're disqualified from benefits. This bill would provide an exception to quitting, but you must notify your employer of your problem and give the employer a reasonable opportunity to address that, meaning give you some time off or otherwise change your hours or something else to accommodate. But if the employer cannot do that, then you would not be disqualified from unemployment benefits. This bill also changes the appeal time period, reduces it from 30 calendar days to 20 calendar days. I might point out for the first 40 years of the program, the appeal period was 7 calendar days, was expanded to 15, then expanded later to 30. We would like to reduce that to 20 calendar days. Our statistics show that applicants for benefits appeal right away because they're being denied. Employers have a tendency, however, to wait till the last second to appeal. We feel that getting employers to appeal, in effect, 10 days sooner will save the trust fund $750,000 a year in overpayments. But this bill also requires that the last day of the appeal period be set out specifically on any determination, meaning it will say the day and date when it becomes final. You'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't, on how many people don't realize there are 31 days in the month of January and feel if it was mailed on the 3rd, they have until February 3rd to appeal, and they actually only have until February 2nd. So this bill will mandate that that be set forth on every determination. As Senator indicated, this bill is cost neutral. It does provide for a freeze on benefits for people we feel are collecting a disproportionately high weekly benefit amount. That would occur because we could look at a small snapshot in time, a quarter, if you will, to base your benefits on in certain instances. And certain people get a bonus, work overtime, have a second job in a quarter, and they get an inflated weekly benefit amount in relation to their total yearly earnings. And this would provide a cap on that, temporary cap. And that offsets the cost of some of the other provisions, which I indicate expand benefits. The administration's position is that the bill should be cost neutral, and that's one of the ways we can get support for all interest groups. And as I say, as the Senator indicated, the AFL-CIO has signed off on this bill, the Teamsters, Jobs Now Coalition, Legal Aid Society. Those are the highlights of this bill. The division report, which was an amendment put on in Senator Tomasoni's committee, is something the department questions only because there are a lot of individuals in Minnesota who exhaust their benefits. There have been over 9,000 people who have exhausted unemployment benefits since the start of the year, and there is no extension available for those individuals. So we've always questioned on special extensions why a particular group and the fundamental fairness of that. We're not disputing that the particular individuals covered by the division report are in need of additional benefits. And if there's anything further, I'll answer any questions anyone might have.
Are there any questions, Senator Betzel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sparks, could you then talk a little bit about the amendment on Article 7? I was reading through myself and I was wondering what was the background of this.
Madam Chair and Senator Betzel, I think I'll let Mr. Nelson answer, but it has to deal with a certain business up north. But Mr. Nelson could probably
explain. He could also let us know if the amendment remains fiscal neutral. I mean, it seems like it would cost money.
Madam Chair, to your question first, I believe the fiscal note, there was a fiscal note done on the particular bill when it was done as a standalone. It was done, I believe, right before the amendment. I can tell you that in its current version, it would cost about $400,000 a year. Now, that's if every single person who is eligible, in fact, collected all benefits which would be available. We have found that on certain extensions, it's only about 60% of the people who are eligible actually do, in fact, receive the maximum. So we're looking at a cost probably around $240,000 a year, one time out of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. That trust fund currently, as of the first part of March, had $340 million in it. This is a really small amount in relation to the trust fund. As to that, as to Senator Betzel, your question, this is Ainsworth Lumber Company. They operate in three locations in northern Minnesota, in Bemidji, in Grand Rapids, and in Cook. Two of those plants closed down in Cook and in Grand Rapids, and the Bemidji laid off half of their workers and shut down a second production line. Our investigation shows that these individuals earned way above the average wage in the area, that all of these counties, the average wage in the county is well below the state average. The unemployment rate in each of these three counties is well above the state average, and the belief is that these individuals have a very difficult time without additional training to earn anywhere near what they have in the past. And this bill does require that they be in training to get these additional benefits in dislocated worker training. And a number of them already currently are in dislocated worker training, and benefits are running out and have run out in certain instances for these individuals.
Other questions? Senator Pariseau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson or Senator Sparks, does the bill then, even as amended or not amended, cover all sectors of employment? Does it just cover people who were full timers and then might go down to part time?
Oh, so it was the 27 that was not
for a period.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, it covers all workers. A worker who's been only working part time can, in fact, collect unemployment benefits. There aren't any restrictions on having to work as long as you meet the minimum qualification requirements, which the minimum qualification requirements are you earn $1,000 in your high quarter and $250 in three additional quarters, you can qualify for unemployment benefits. Minnesota does not restrict part-time workers to having to look for full-time employment. As long as they look for suitable employment, and if you've been only working part-time throughout your history, part-time work is suitable for you.
Thank you.
Further questions or discussion from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the bill for Senator Sparks.
Before Senator Bergen does that, Mr. Chair, we do have a small amendment, the A070396 amendment.
Small amendment with a huge number.
Do we have that amendment?
I believe we do. Check with Jane.
It needs to be passed on.
Okay, if we could have the amendment distributed. While it's being distributed, I think everybody has it. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a small amendment that was brought to me by the Carpenters Union. It's some comfort language for them. Mr. Nelson can give you a little bit more background as well.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment was put in on the House side last week. What it does, it provides that individuals who obtain employment, union employment, through their union, and that's normally how they search for work, by signing up with their union, can in fact then restrict their additional search for work to contractors in the construction industry who are unionized. So they can't be forced, even though they search for work through their union, under union rules, can't be forced to look for work outside of that. I think, to the extent I have known this before it was brought up on the House side, I think the number of individuals who probably have been denied under this particular provision are small, less than a handful. But this, as Senator indicated, is comfort language for the unions, and I would have interpreted the current statute as encompassing this, but it is comfort language, and we don't believe it has any substantial impact.
Move it. Sir Anderson.
I'll move the adoption of the AO7-0396 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Anderson. Senator Pariseau.
One question on the amendment, just because I have never served unemployment and don't know anybody who might have experienced this before, but I think that comfort language is good. But is there any requirement that even if they seek at a union contractor, if they end up working outside the state, are they still eligible when unemployment is necessary for them here in the state? I don't know that. I've never asked that question of anyone.
Mr. Chairman, Johnson. Senator Pariseau, federal law requires that if you work in any state, you can combine employment and qualify. And in Minnesota, if you work a few hours in Minnesota and work the bulk of your work in Wisconsin, you can, in fact, file in Minnesota. So long as you've worked in Minnesota, you can use out-of-state employment, combine it with your Minnesota employment, and qualify for benefits, and those wages earned out-of-state would be considered the same as earned in the state for benefit qualification purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nelson, for clarifying that for me, because I never thought of it before.
Okay, we have Senator Anderson's motion on the amendment. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Frederickson. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nelson, I heard you say that there's $340 million in the fund now. This question does not relate to the bill at all. I'm just curious about the status of the fund. I believe a few years ago we changed the rates and the method that employers paid. Could you talk in general terms where we are and how much you would like to have in that fund and when the rate changes for employers as the fund builds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, in 2002, the legislature passed what we called it solvency language to change the tax structure a little bit to try to bring, because the trust fund was projected at that time to be going into deficit status. It, in fact, went into deficit status in 2003. In March of 2003, it was $443 million in debt. But that 2002 changes in the statute helped bring it out of debt a lot quicker. It is it came out of debt in 2004. As I indicated, it ended the year, December 31st, with $392 million. We're currently paying out $25 million a week, so it is going down. We'll get the first receipts for 2007 on April 30th, and the fund, that is going to be over $400 million, will come in on April 30th into the fund. We project the fund will end the year in two, absent any change in the economy, will end the year with about $700 million in it. That is half of what the legislative auditor has suggested be in the fund to make it actuarially sound to cover minor downturns in the economy. How long it will take to get there really depends on the economy. It'll take a number of years with a very good economy to become solvent. If we have any blips, it won't become solvent under those actuarial standards.
Further questions for Mr. Nelson. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Nelson, one other question. Prior to this, do you know what the highest amount that was in the fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, in 2000, December 31st, 2000, was $720 million, I believe, in the fund. And it was, again, went into deficit status by 2003. It was $400 million in debt.
Chair, Ms. Nelson, thank you very much for that information.
Okay, further questions? Before we vote on the bill, Mr. Mossman, do you want to just comment on the fiscal note we have?
Mr. Chairman and members, as was discussed, there's a variety of provisions in the base bill prior to the amendment that was in the division report that changes the potential for receiving unemployment insurance benefits in a number of areas. And the, as indicated on the fiscal note, it is roughly relatively revenue neutral. Almost all of the activity is in the federal fund and other funds. There will be a slight net benefit to the general fund, and the amendment that was put on, as was testified to, would be approximately $240,000 in cost, taking the testifier at word, and that would also fall into the federal fund.
Okay. Further questions on the bill? I think Senator Berglund had moved that Senate File 167 as amended be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr.
Nelson,
Chair,
Senator Sparks. Okay, then if we can revert back to Senator Vickerman with Senate File 1925, which is the Omnibus Agriculture and Veterans Funding Bill. Senator Vickerman. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to bring what I think is a very important piece of legislation in this year. It has to do with agriculture, veterans, and military affairs. Senate File 1925 is Agriculture, Veterans, and Military Affairs Omnibus Budget Bill. The bill passed the Agriculture and Veterans Budget Division with unanimous support. The budget makes strategic investments in existing agricultural programs, and it provides a significant new investment in the next generation of biofuels, which will enable Minnesota to position itself as a national leader in research and development of agricultural-based biofuels, including cellulosic energy ethanol. This budget also provides increased funding for military, veterans, and military programs that recognize and addresses the many challenges that our National Guard members currently serving in Iraq will face when they return from combat and are reintegrated into civilian life. The Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Budget Division was given a general fund budget target that was $32 million above the base. Senate File 1925 came in on target, despite the fact that our budget was $5.7 million below the governor's budget recommendations for programs funded under our budget jurisdiction. Now I'd like to briefly highlight a couple parts of the bill, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Senate budget reflects Minnesota's support of our National Guard members who have been called up in record numbers to serve in Iraq. The increased funding will be used to meet the needs of returning veterans and their families. The key provisions include a $2 million increase for the State Soldiers Assistance Fund, which will provide emergency financial assistance to any veterans and their families, including such things as medical care, counseling, rehabilitation services, and a temporary shelter for the homeless. $1.5 million for the reintegration program will provide services to National Guard members returning from Iraq and to their families. Guard members and their spouses are brought into meetings at 30, 60, and 90-day intervals after their return from Iraq and are counseled about issues including such things as post-traumatic stress, mental health problems, service-connected disabilities, and family problems. Guardian members and spouses are also provided with information and assistance in filing for state and federal benefits. The bill also provides two-year funding for a veteran ombudsman at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The Veterans Ombudsman will act as an advocate on behalf of the residents and their families. The Senate budget also provides about $8 million for the research and development of the next generation of biofuels. Minnesota leads the nation in the production of ethanol and biodiesel. This new biofuel initiative will ensure that Minnesota remains a national leader in the development of agricultural-based biofuels, including cellulosic ethanol, biofuels made from a variety of biomass materials such as perennial grasses, agricultural co-products, and waste wood. Mr. Chair and members, I have two fiscal people who walk through the money part, if that would be okay with you, easier than I could do it.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, hopefully in your packet or in your is a handout of the spreadsheet for this bill. It's basically a two-part spreadsheet. They're both pretty close together. The first one is Agriculture and Veterans Omnibus Budget Division Senate Change Items All Funds, and attached to it is a Senate Change Items General Fund. They're pretty much identical, and I attached a General Fund one just because there's a on the first one there's a couple of change items within the Ag Fund that are in the first spreadsheet, and I'll go through the first spreadsheet, and I guess the columns to look at are columns I, J, and K. I use 3 points of references of the Senate budget. Column I is the Senate budget versus the previous biennium. Column J is the Senate versus the forecast, which is our target based off of. And the column K is the Senate versus the governor. And I'll quickly breeze through the change items on the list. And if anyone has any questions, they can certainly stop me and ask. Lines 11 through 16 were all some change items suggested by the governor. Pest management, some for additional spending, some areas like pest management, emergency planning and response, some record keeping requests, meat inspections, electronic field inspections, and some additional costs for rentals of the lab. Line 17, we're going to have a – this spreadsheet already reflects the technical amendment that will be – that have to adopt here in a little bit. We're taking the clean water appropriations out of this bill, and they're going to be added to a supplement request from Senator Anderson where all the other clean water appropriations are will be carried. So the clean water appropriations of $4.5 million for the biennium, which was the governor's level or requested level – will be carried in a separate bill from Senator Anderson. So we have a technical amendment that will be taking that out. Line 18 is the Senate level, the compensation adjustment at 3.25%, which is $508,000 above the governor for the Department of Ag. We have some additional spending for the Minnesota Grown Program. Next, lines 20 through 23 are some proposals from Senate File 480, which is carried by Senator Kubley, which deals with the new bioenergy proposals or programs. We have $3 million of a one-time transfer for the Ag BMP loans under that proposal. We have $150,000 for some business development. Line 22 would be some new bioenergy producer payments, and you'll see they don't start until 2011, so that is carried on over in column M. And that would be a capped open appropriation of $11 million. And then we have $1.75 million for the Minnesota Institute of Sustainable Bioenergy at the University of Minnesota. Next, we have a couple of increases in some existing programs. $260,000 of new money for sustainable ag grants and some additional money, $200,000 for organic cost share programs. Next, we have two studies that deal with the new biofuels and ethanol. One at the Boys Fort Chippewa Tribe and another one at the White Earth Chippewa Tribes. Next, we have some additional appropriation to the county and district ag societies. We have a one-time grant to the Minnesota Forage Turf Seed Advisory Committee from Senator Stumpf, and we have a technical amendment that fixes that in the bill. The bill actually says $250, and it's supposed to be $250,000, so we'll fix that. Next, line 31 was the Senate has zeros here, and that was the governor's proposal for bioenergy, and the governor had $10 million in the 08-09, and basically what the Senate did is adopted some of the provisions from Senator Kubley's bill to as a difference from what the governor had. And then lines 32 and 33 are the two small change items within the ag fund, and they tie to some new revenues down on line 40 and 41. So there's a couple small fee increases in this bill, dealing with the retail food handler program and the Minnesota Grown program. Next, we get down to line 45, which is the Animal Health Board.
Who's the chairman? Oh, I'm sorry. Before we proceed to the next section, I would have a question on some of them that Mr. Mueller just covered. Specifically, line 25, the organic certification cost share. Do we provide certification or equivalent cost shares to other people who certify, for instance, the people who have to certify for chemical applications and those kinds of things? Do we provide it to any other sector? And what's the reason we are having to do it for one sector only, if not?
So I wonder if there's any coordination, bioenergy.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pierso, this was a program. There is an existing base in this. It was started in 1999. That provides money for those because of the expense of going through the organic certification process. I think the average is about $900 for per year for a farmer to become certified, because they do it to these private nonprofit entities that provide certification. We do have programs for pesticide education, but we don't have a similar program where we provide kind of cost share money to an individual producer that's becoming certified for pesticide application. But we do, the state has been involved in this, and this would increase the level of funding. They ran out of money last year fairly early in the process. There's $50,000 a year in that program right now. This would increase it to $150,000 to take care of that problem with the lack of funding for it.
Mr. Chair, are you aware of any other place where we're kicking in for people's certification, education, any other option of employment that you're aware of? I'm not sure of that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pierso, I'm not familiar with other programs that do that, but I do know, this is an ongoing program. It's been in place for a number of years.
Well, I question, Mr. Chairman, if it's been going on for a few years, maybe it's sustainable enough for the persons to do it themselves.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perso, you will see in the language that it's only allowed for the first 5 years of certification. After that, the people are left on their own once they've established. But the program only pays for the only provides a cost share for the first 5 years when they're becoming certified.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, with the 2025 and all of the energy or the major legislation that was passed and signed by the governor that Senator Anderson and Pretner Solon and others worked so hard on, it'll be a multi-billion-dollar business going forward. I'm just wondering, my question is on lines 20, 21, 22, 23, 26, 27, dealing with bioenergy business, bioenergy production, sustainable ag, bioenergy, biofuels. I'm just wondering how these, if there's duplication or if there is any coordination of these things. I mean, and we've got to do these kinds of things. I understand that, but there's about six or seven issues here. Is anybody pulling this stuff together? Is the Chippewa tribe in White Earth doing something that Boise Fort is doing? And does that make sense? I mean, there's about six or seven of these issues, and they amount to about $5 million. And we have to head in this direction, but I'm just concerned if the right hand knows what the left hand is doing and if there's coordination here. Can anybody try to take a shot at that? And the university's doing stuff that's not in here. You know, there's four or five of these bio things that the U's doing. And I know we've got to do this stuff because we're going to be the leader in this area, but I'm just concerned about who knows what the others do it.
Mr. Knopf.
Chairman, Senator Epson, the 2025, as I understand it, and Senator Anderson's her bill, she can address some of those issues if she wants to, but the 2025 is electric generation. This goes beyond electric generation. Now, the program that
Mr. Chairman, it's renewables. I mean,
it is renewables in general, but it's not
intertwined.
Much of this will not be for electric generation. The one program that does address the issue you're talking about is the one that Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier that has the $11 million in the tail. That's on line 22, where it deals with the bioenergy, because that payment is going to be based on the BTU content, and some of that energy will likely be going for electric generation and could be toward the renewable fuels. But much of the other, many of the other programs in here, the end result will likely be ethanol or some other type of transportation fuel, and that is my understanding wouldn't necessarily count toward the 2025.
Right, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'm not. It's work in progress. We'll just keep looking at this stuff because I think there's so much going on here, and we gotta reel it in somehow. So.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, I think you make a really good point. We've talked about these bioenergy payments because they are the electric sector, that maybe they should move over to commerce eventually because they've traditionally dealt with the electric side and ag's dealt with the biofuels. But I'm with you that I think in the end what we really need is one state entity that's really focusing on all these areas, because this is going to be, I think, the biggest thing that hit our economy for a really long time, and it's going to be the next decade or so of development. And if we're not intentional about how we go forward, then we're going to lose a lot of opportunities in Minnesota. So I have some ideas about that, and we can keep working on it.
I'm not one, as you know, for more government or big government, but this might be an area where you need it. Energy Commissioner, just to oversee all of this and make sure. And this is good legislation. Don't get me wrong, Senator Bickerman, but I just think there's so much going on in this area, and Senator Anderson and I, we've both been interested in this stuff for a long time. So we get a little time left for this session. Maybe we have to look at how we can reel it all in.
Mr. Chair.
These are good things, but let's coordinate much better than we're doing, I think.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I actually have a bill that would create a new energy department, and you and I should talk about it.
Or recreate the old energy department?
new improved energy department.
Okay, Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, one other comment on that. A lot of these programs, especially the ones from Senator Kubley's bill, and there's actually a couple provisions that are in Senator Anderson's budget division that the Board of Water and Soil Resources, a couple of little smaller funding requests in that area. I guess a lot of these programs sort of, because this biofuels take such a major switch in agricultural practices, there's a need for some upfront money to maybe help farmers switch over to a different, you know, crop and things like that. And then the two studies here on lines 26 and 27, those are two proposals that were brought in that basically these Indian tribes said they had a lot of land available that's not in production right now that where we could sort of start a trial of some of these programs. And without some big spaces and open spaces of land where we can try some of these crops, it's hard to see whether it's a value or a viable opportunity. So, it is a multi-level process here, and Senator Anderson is going to have a couple of things in her budget maybe, too, that deal with this some of these programs.
Senator Pariseau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I question whether or not there has ever been a study or a pilot project that proved cellulosic or, you know, kinds of new grass technology for technologies with grass for building fuel have ever been proved. If we're going to put a whole bunch of money into starting it, maybe we ought to know first whether it's going to work. And I know there are a lot of people studying it, university and several other nonprofits are probably working on it, but how much are we going to pour into it before we know much about it? Where do we start and where do we end?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Pariseau, you know, we've had some of the groundbreaking research done right here by Dr. Tillman and Dr. Hill.
I remember from LCCMR, but the point is here we're pouring money in before answers come in.
Well, and they found that, you know, you can get energy, higher BTUs and less CO2. You can actually reduce CO2, sequester, have a negative CO2 emissions and produce more energy from these native mixed species of prairie, and they've figured out the optimal combination of numbers of species. But in terms of going to the next level of demonstrating it in the field, that's one of the LCCMR projects, is to try to, you know, they're going to put a gasifier on a trailer and drive it around the state and, you know, and figure out places where they can take some of these crops and turn them into energy right there and then, because we need to demonstrate it. So I think this is helping to get the next step of research and to figure out where you can grow these and how you harvest them successfully to keep them cost-effective. So I think these are important steps.
All right, thank you. Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, I'll continue on the spreadsheet to the Animal Health Board. Lines 50 and 51 show the two change items. Both governor's proposal and a bill carried by Senator Skoy with some additional money to help with the elimination of bovine tuberculosis up in the northwestern part of the state. Then we have the Senate level compensation adjustment. On to the next page. Page 2 of the Senate change items, all funds. We have the Ag Utilization Research Institute. And here is also some additional grants for the bioenergy. This is sort of a combination of both the governor's proposal and Senator Kubley's proposal of additional money to the AURI for grants dealing with bioenergy. Next, we get down to the Department of Military Affairs, and we have some change items here. A one-time cost for special assessments of $185,000. Some additional money for armory maintenance. This was about $1.9 million below what the governor had requested. Senate-level compensation adjustment. The reintegration program of $1.5 million, it's a one-time cost, but it could be spread out over a number of years. Some additional help, general support employees. There's a lot of new programs and money coming into the department that they need some additional staff to handle all the new programs and the returning soldiers and everything. And then line 79 is a scaled-back version of a bill that we heard from Senator Pretner Solon dealing with helping reimbursement of when the department is asked to send out people for honor guard ceremonies. the last department here, we have Department of Veterans Affairs. There are a number of change items that were in the governor's bill that we picked up either partially or fully. The State Soldiers Assistance Program, $2 million. County Veteran Service Organization or Officer Grants, we're at $1 million. The governor had a higher amount of $2.3 million higher. Next, we have a couple of veteran outreach programs. For first one for tribal services and within the Indian tribes, $1.5 million. For homeless programs, another $1.5 million. And then some marketing and outreaches at $500,000. And those last two we made one time just because they're kind of a big new programs. We wanted to see how well. How many they were serving. Next, we have, in addition to the higher education assistant offices, that was started last year, I believe, and this is some additional money put into that, but below what the governor had requested. Information technology request from the department, some additional money for the state veteran cemetery, some additional administrative resources, again, to handle all the new programs and services that these two organizations are now offering. They need some additional administrative help. And then the last line there is the compensation adjustment at the Senate level. You'll see down on line 113 is a subtotal of just the general fund. And again, originally we had a $32 million target both for 08, 09 and in the tails, but the amendment, technical amendment that we still need to do yet, takes out $4.5 million in 08-09, and so thus that'll change our tail or our target to $27.5 million. And that is the.
Okay, thank you. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions. Appreciate bringing up the technical amendment. That'll help the actually that's a program that's related to the energy industry too, because the turf grass producers are trying to gear up for breeding a better grade of switchgrass, which is one of the used in cellulosic ethanol. First of all, the question I have is on the TB area. From the looks of it, this basically does not, I can't find, this payment here is mainly for the kind of the Animal Health Board expenditures. Was there discussion in committee about some additional costs for fencing in that area? And is that a separate area issue? Or? And I have another question on another
Mr.
area.
Chairman and Senator Stumpf, that proposal is actually going to be over with the DNR and is be considered by Senator Anderson's committee.
All right, fencing. Thank you. The other one is on in the area of the producer payments for cellulosic produced ethanol. Currently, we have producer payments for ethanol production, and now this would be cellulosic ethanol. There's also another fuel that's certainly a biofuel that are there payments for the production of biodiesel, and how does that fit in with the whole bioenergy area?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, there's not currently a program for payments to biodiesel. What the state has done is require 2% biodiesel, but there are no direct payments. But if you look at the biofuel payments, and I think it's section 22.
What page is that on?
It'd be on page, starting on page 19, but most of the information would be on page 20. where it basically, if you, as long with this program on 20.6, on line 20.6, you see cellulosic biofuel means transportation fuel derived from cellulosic materials. So it is possible that if you're making biodiesel from cellulosic materials, excuse me, that you would qualify for this program. But it's not, that's the one that the program probably, the estimate is that there won't be anybody up and operating probably till about the year 2013 under this. But it could be eligible under this if they can make biodiesel from cellulosic material.
Well, biodiesel is generally made from crushing
soybeans.
Soybeans. In the case of, there's a new plant that's projected to start construction this fall up in northwestern Minnesota, and the product that they'll be using will be canola. And one of the problems that they're experiencing is that most of the canola crop that they're going to be crushing currently is produced in Canada. And so they're trying to figure out how to encourage people, farmers basically in Minnesota and the United States, to increase their capacity for, and you know, their number of bushels for or canola production. And certainly, I think with the state mandating, it would certainly fall into that. And I hope Senator Anderson's listening, because I think if we're talking about biofuels, it ought to be biofuels across the board and not just, I mean, you got cellulosic, which isn't even a proven industry yet. I mean, it's proven, but not there yet. So I have to talk to you about that.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Knopf, were you going to? I'm sorry, Mr. Mueller.
Chairman, I guess it's up to you, or whether we do the technical amendment now or have Mr. Knopf go through the rest of the bill.
Mr. Knopf, did you want to go through the rest of the bill at this time?
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'll go through Article 1, and I think Mr. Bonnendrung can go through Article 2 if that works well for the committee. The first section, of course, is a summary of appropriations, and then section 2 is agricultural. This is boilerplate language, kind of detailing what's in the bill. If you look in section 3, I'll just highlight kind of the riders that are involved here. Mr. Mueller went through the money parts of the bill. On page 2, line 22, you've got a base rider. The rider on 2.26 is a rider that was carried from 2 years ago. That will be modified in the amendment. It basically requires them to continue the level of pesticide monitoring and groundwater that they've been doing. On 2.34, you get that'll be deleted. That's basically a clean water legacy provision. Same with the rider on 3.4. The amendment that'll be adopted later will also delete that, because that's going to be carried in another provision in another place. On 3.11, this is a governor's request for additional invasive species control. And this is one part of it. You'll see another part later in another area of ag. On 3.14, that's for additional meat. That's an additional meat inspector for the department. On 3.17, that's a governor's recommendation for electronic inspection system costs for dairy and food inspections. 3.20, that's some additional money for emergency planning for the department that was in the governor's budget. On 3.23, that's the livestock premise identification activities that was in the governor's budget. On 3.30, what you'll have is, we'll see some sections later, some statutory sections. They're consolidating two accounts. We had a Minnesota grown account and a Minnesota grown matching account. And what the governor proposes is merging those accounts. There's some additional general fund money, and we'll also see a fee change later. But this is a rider that kind of that collapses that down. We have carried riders for these in the past, but it's a little bit different now because of the consolidation. And on 4.11, that's been a base rider for sustainable agriculture grants. As Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier, there's some additional money. It was a bill of Senator Vickerman's, Senate File 1038. That provided, and again, it was on the spreadsheet, the additional money for this. 4.24 is a base rider. on livestock siting issues to help out with the local planning and zoning. And that's, again, been carried for a while now. On 5.6, you'll see the that's some more money for integrated pest management. There are two different divisions within the Department of Agriculture that work on that, so that's money for each of those. But it's basically for additional integrated pest management. On 5.9, that's the Clean Water Legacy. That's going to be deleted in the amendment. On 5.16, that's from Senate File 480 from Senator Kubley. And as Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier, that's the $3 million for the revolving loan account. It'll work through the Agriculture Best Management Practices Loan Program. On 5.24, this is the cost share payments that was discussed earlier for those producers who are going to be involved in organic agriculture. And you'll see that on line 5.31 that the cost share payments are two-thirds of the cost or $350, whichever is less. And I think I said earlier that the average is about $900 for those people. So this still doesn't get them up to two-thirds, but for those smaller producers, it probably will. There's supposed to be a five-year provision, and for some reason I'm just not. That's on 6.5. Excuse me. That was I mentioned earlier that is for the first 5 years only, and then also if you're eligible, there are some federal payments for this that farmers may be eligible for. If they receive the federal payments, they aren't eligible for this program. And then on the rider on 6.20. Is the current ethanol program. This is the base amount for ethanol producer payments for the current plants that are in the program. And that's, again, a base rider on that. And then on 7.3, we have the a base rider for the ethanol combustion efficiency grants. And then on line 7.7 is the rider that was Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier. That's the money for MISA, for Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture. And that's to provide the on-station, on-farm-scale research and outreach to farmers for growing plants that will be used for cellulosic ethanol or cellulosic biofuels. And then on 7.26, that's again from Senate File 480, Senator Kubley, and this is money for grants and non-governmental entities to assist in development of business plans for people who are planning to become involved in cellulosic biofuel production. And then on 7.34, this is the grant for the Boys Fort Band for a feasibility study. That was, again, Senator Bach's bill, Senate File 597. And that's to the Boys Fort Band for their feasibility study. And then on 8.16, that's the grant for the White Earth Band Chippewa for their feasibility study on renewable energy biofuels. That's from Senate File 1211, Senator Skoy. And then the next rider on page 9.1, that's a base rider, and it has to do with the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. On 9.24 is another base rider for the Northern Crops Institute. 9.28 is a base rider for the Livestock Breeders Association. 9.31 is a base rider, but there was additional money that Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier for the County and District Agricultural Societies. That was from a bill, Senate File 496, Senator Skoy, to increase those payments. Currently, they've not been able to fully fund the payments to those county and district agricultural societies. This would get them to that level. On 10.6 is a base rider for the Minnesota Forage and Turf Seed Advisory Committee. And then on 10.15, that was the part that Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier where it should have been $250,000. That will be in the amendment for the Minnesota Turf Seed Council for agronomic research on native plants. And then on 10.25, that's a base rider. That's the program through Second Harvest for distributing milk in the state. That's $200,000 a year. That was, again, in the base. On 11.20, that's a base rider for the mental health counseling to support farm families. On 11.28, that's a base rider for the money for the grants for the Horticultural Society. And then on 11.31, this is money for the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. And that's that was part of Senate File 497, Senator Scoy. And then on 12.4, the rider is the bovine TB eradication. That's the additional money to the Board of Animal Health to assist with that program. And then the remaining riders on that on 12.7, 12.11, and 12.23 are base riders of programs in the Board of Animal Health for Yoni's disease and avian pneumovirus and cervidae inspection. On 12.29 to 12.32, this is from Senator Kubley, Senate File 480. There's also money in the governor's budget. This is a blend of the two for AURI, for technical assistance and technology transfer to bioenergy crop producers and users. Section 6 is a section that will be carried, as I understand it, by all the divisions dealing with the compensation increases when going to the 3.25% requiring that it be used for that purpose. Section 7 is a provision that was in the governor's budget. It deals with the Department of Agriculture and the receipt of federal funds and how the federal funds can be used. It's clarifying language on the use of that money. Section 8 was, again, in the governor's budget. It deals with the agricultural development grants. And what it does is, if you look on 14.11, it allows up to $70,000 per year rather than per biennium for an organization to receive those grants. Section 9, you see this is dealing with the Minnesota Grown logo. Now, there are some substantive changes here allowing in 14.16 for commodities that are raised also to use that. And then at 14.20, the 80% provision would apply to all products, not just raw agricultural products. That was, again, in the governor's budget. The license fee increase that was mentioned earlier is in Section 10. It's the license to use the Minnesota Grown logo. Currently, it's $5. This is an increase to $20 for the license, for the annual license. And then Section 11, Section 12, and Section 13 all relate to blending those two accounts into the same account, into one account. And you'll see later on there'll be repealers that relate to that. So those are that's with the consolidation of those two accounts, again, from the governor's budget. Sections 14 and 15 are, again, from the governor's budget. Apparently there's some concern in the Department of Finance about having a revolving account within the agricultural fund. Apparently there's a preference to use a special revenue fund for those. So this transfers that Ag BMP loan program from the agricultural fund to the special revenue fund. Section 16, this is dealing with, it's removing the requirement that people who apply pesticides to public waters of the state have to have an aquatic pest control license. With the changes, any licensed applicator will be able to apply them to waters. Apparently, there's been some concerns. This was in the governor's budget. So you'll see later on there's a repealer to repeal the aquatic pest control license provision. So these just take out the language that relate to that. So you'll see, again, Section 16, that was in the governor's budget recommendations and deals with eliminating the aquatic pest control license. Same with Section 17. Section 18 also relates to that. Section 19 was in the governor's budget bill. It deals with an exemption for a permit and safeguard requirements for those individuals that store no more than 6,000 gallons of liquid commercial fertilizer for use on their own property. It was also carried in another bill of Senator Dills, I think Senate File 655, but it was in the governor's budget recommendations. Section 20, this again deals with the aquatic pest control license. There was a surcharge for the ACRA fund, the Agricultural Response and Reimbursement Account, and what this does is just since that license won't exist anymore, it's a technical change on 8.31 to eliminate the surcharge on that license. And then on Section 21, it was a recommendation of the governor to increase the fees for the food handler facility floor plans. The department will do a review of those floor plans, and these are the fees that are charged that are being increased. Section 22 is an amendment in committee. What this would do is allow the Board of Animal Health, if the U.S., if the United States Department of Agriculture doesn't pay an indemnity for an animal loss to bovine TB, this would allow the board to pay fair market value for those as an indemnity for those animals that are lost. Section 23, as discussed earlier, this is the section. This is one of the sections from Senator Kubley, Senate File 480. This provides the language that will implement a cellulosic biofuel program. It's modeled after the current ethanol program in the state, and you can see there are a number of definitions, including an eligible biofuel producer. I think that's probably the one that's worthy to note on 20.28. It means that they have to have at least 60% owned and controlled by farmers or natural persons who reside in the county where the cellulosic biofuel facility is located or an adjoining county. And you can see that they have a goal of 60 million gallons production under that. And again, these are the, and then the payments you have in paragraph A on the top of page 21. These are payments of 15 cents per gallon for any form of cellulosic biofuel. And then if you're using native grasses for cellulosic biofuel, then you can be eligible for the payment under paragraph B, which is 30 cents per gallon. And then it basically, the rest of it is basically implementing those programs. Under the one program, you can get it for 5 years under paragraph A, but it's eligible for up to 10 years under paragraph B. You see there's a cap on the open appropriation on 21.34 of $27 million. And then each plant is eligible for up to 15 million gallons of biofuel production, which is comparable to the ethanol program today. There is a clawback provision in here that basically if they're becoming eligible, if you look on 22.17, if they become ineligible to receive the payments, if they aren't meeting that 60% requirement mentioned earlier, within 5 years after the last payment was received, or 10 years after all payments, they must be refunded to the commissioner, and refunded payments are deposited back into the general fund. And then paragraph J requires reports to make sure that the entity is in compliance with the requirements for the structure of the entity. Paragraph K on 23, there was some concern that a plant could be eligible for both of the programs that are being implemented here. So this just says that if they're receiving payment under the one for production for production under one program, they're not eligible for the other program. You'll see a similar in Section 24. There's a similar provision. Section 24 is a bioenergy production incentive. This is the one that's based on the BTU content of what's being produced, and it. Again, it has the stat or the open appropriation that you'll see it's capped later. You see the definition of bioenergy production on 23.15, and then the bioenergy producer payments. Again, under paragraph A, if they're using any source of cellulosic material for this, then they can receive 75 cents per million BTUs. Under paragraph B, if they're using native cellulosic material, then the payment is elevated to $1.50 per million BTU. And then, again, there are similar provisions on how the payment program works and the cap on each facility's payment. Once the facility, on 20.14, the sentence that starts there, once it reaches, 1.5 trillion, I think, once it reaches that level, then no other increment will qualify. And you can see the cap on 24.18 of $11 million per fiscal year overall. And each plant is restricted to $2,250,000 in any year. And then you can also see how the program works as far as the under the first part, they're only eligible for 3 years. And under the second part, if they're using native materials, they're eligible for 10 years. But they can transfer to the new, but then the capacity that their payment on starts with the under the first part if they transfer to using native materials later on. Again, they are also required to file a report or claim for that. Again, there aren't as many restrictions on this as far as who owns the facility as there are in the biofuel program. And then I can move on to Section 25. These are recommendations from the governor, and it has to do with the the direct loan for the first section, you see a number of sections related to the Agricultural Improvement Loan Program, and this eliminates the direct loan option. Under the program, currently the department or the Rural Finance Authority can issue loans for either direct or as a participation, and as I understand it, they really aren't involved in the direct loan. So this would eliminate for that from the statutes to not give anybody hope for something that they really what they do is that they preferred to go through local lenders, and then they issue the loan for 45%. So this eliminates that option. Section 25 does that. Also in Section 26, that relates to the eliminating the direct loan. Same with Section 27. Those are all part of the governor's recommendations, and you'll see a repealer later that also repeals that direct loan program. Section 28 deals with disaster recovery. That was a program initiated, I think, in special session a few years ago because of flooding. What this does, and it's a recommendation of the governor, that that we also include drought, so that people who are suffering because of drought can also apply for the disaster recovery loans. And you see on 26.4, you've got the purchase of watering system, irrigation systems. So it expands this program to go beyond mostly dealing with flood. Originally, the program was designed for floods. And then you'll see on 26.13, increasing the net worth limitations for who's eligible for the program. And it also would increase it in subsequent years based on inflation. And then also on the bottom of page 26, the plan is to, instead of having a separate fund for disaster recovery, there's a revolving loan account within the RFA that deals with a number of items, including manure digester loans and some other things. We'll see that later on. This would now place the repayments and the funding for that out of that revolving loan account. And then section 29 deals with the livestock equipment pilot loan program. On 20, these are again language changes recommended by the administration. On 27.19, it eliminates a preference for those that file a Schedule F, the individual farmers, and for those who have farmed less than 10 years. On 20.31, you can see that the length of the loan is being increased, the maximum length from 7 to 10 years under this pilot loan program. And then on page 28, you see that they're expanding the purposes for that pilot loan program. Section 30, as I mentioned earlier, this is the RFA revolving loan account where the disaster recovery is being moved under that. You can see currently there's money in it for livestock equipment loans, methane digesters, and the value-added agricultural product loan programs, and they're adding disaster recovery as one of the purposes for that account. Refinancing I mentioned a few moments ago. Section 31, this is the Aggie bond program where the state gets involved to make the bonds tax-free to the lender. It's a program that's been in place since 1991. What it does, though, is this is a fairly minor change in Section 31. If you look on 29.14, what it does is it reduces the number of years that a participant needs to be involved in a farm management program. This actually matches in our regular RFA programs where the state money is involved, that we have a three-year provision. Actually, it was reduced from 5 to 3 several years ago. This would make a comparable change to the Aggie bond program to go from 5 to 3. Section 32 was an amendment in committee. It deals with next-generation bioenergy recommendations. This is to try to get some recommendations before the next session to deal with the whole bioenergy, biomass feedstock. And what it does is it requires those agencies, the Commissioner of Commerce and Natural Resources and Bowser, to work with a broad range of agriculture and conservation stakeholders to develop recommendations. And you can see the recommendations that they'll be coming back with next session. And they have to report that to the chairs of the House and Senate committees and divisions with jurisdiction over agriculture and environment policy and finance. And then you'll see the repealers. The first repealer, the 17.109, that's repealing the language dealing with one of the Minnesota grown accounts. The 18B.315, that relates to the aquatic pest control program or control licensing requirement. 18C.425. This is a was a recommendation by the administration. It's a fee in the fertilizer law that for those people who sell fertilizer before they get licensed or registered, and there are other provisions in there to deal with those people. So that the department thought that was a redundant fee provision. And the provision on, and then the 41B.043 subdivision 1A, that's the direct loan program and the RFA that I mentioned earlier that we saw the language that's being deleted. This is repealing the direct loan provision under the Agricultural Improvement Loan Program. That's the end of Article 2. If anybody has any questions, on Article 1, if anybody has any questions on Article 1.
Senator Betzel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I do have one or two questions. I notice on page 9, I'm looking at lines 20 and 21, there's a report. The commission must submit a work plan dealing with agriculture policy and budget on or before the start of each fiscal year. I'm not quite sure when the report would be submitted. I suppose it'd have to be submitted by July 1st, but I think it could be a little bit more definitive. I'm not quite sure what's involved in here, but you know, couldn't there be a more definite date than it has to be submitted by June 1st or whenever it is? As I say, I'm just looking at the language, and they could submit it, you know, any time up until July 1st. But I think that you want, you know, I don't know what's involved here, so it just sounds quite vague to me.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, this has been part of the bill for a number of years. If you want a more definitive date, you could put one in there, but that's been the language that we've used, and they do submit the reports every year for this program. That's the dairy teams that go out and help dairy farmers improve their production on farm and with better practices in doing that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, when is the report normally submitted?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, it would have to be sometime during the year, but before the start of the fiscal year, it would have to be before July 1st.
Mr. Chair, I don't know much about this. Maybe it's been in here all these years. It just doesn't seem to say much to me. Let me point out page 19, lines 27 to 30. Referring to the board shall include the name of the mortgagee or lender on the indemnity check. Now, we're getting more to e-commerce and electronic transactions, so I don't know if checks are going to be issued necessarily down the road, and the board is not liable if is not named on the check. I would think the better term might be maybe payment or something, because you know we may not be dealing with checks when the payments are made. So I'm just suggesting that maybe the word payment might be a better term instead of the word check.
Mr. Knopf or Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, so the amendment would be page 19, line 29, delete check, insert payment.
And the same on line 30.
Line 30.
Yeah,
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
on that same section, I'm curious why the owner, it's up to the owner to inform the board. Why don't we require them to do a UCC search with a county recorder or secretary of state? That's the usual way to handle that.
Chikanoff, can you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, this was language that was suggested by the Board of Animal Health, and this was how they wanted to do it. We didn't review the process on how they to any sense of
Mr. Knopf is not our UCC expert
well,
in the building.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Fredrickson.
I have a suspicion that the lenders in the state would be a little nervous with this, and it's a fair routine practice with ag lenders and farmers. They file a UCC, and when there's a significant check come, it has both names on. I don't know if Senator Betzel, perhaps you've carried legislation in this area before.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think the owner you know, can just waive the security interests that are on there just by saying there aren't any. So if they're there, I think there has to be a little bit more work done.
Senator Betzel, do you have further language on that section?
Mr. Chairman, I can make an attempt at it.
Mr. Chair, why don't we just move my amendment first, and then we can work on Senator Fredrickson's.
All right, we have Senator Betzel's amendment relative to check versus payment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And before we continue this discussion, we're running late, so we won't have the deficiency bill this morning. We'll schedule that hopefully later this week. Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move on page 19, line 27. Delete after parent B, parent, delete everything before the third the.
Try to make a budget.
And delete the word that. And insert must conduct a lien or mortgage search with the county recorder and if.
What does it read?
So, Mr. Chairman, it would read, the board must conduct a lien or mortgage search with the county recorder and if, and then continue on with the sentence. Yeah. And I'm open to revisions of that if there's a better way to do
it. Mr. Watson, did you...
I don't think so. I'll let the board figure out what they want to do. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, did you?
Senator Fredrickson, did you want to leave the last sentence in where they're not liable?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, committee members, I wasn't sure about that. Do we want to make the state liable if a lien is missed? My amendment did not touch that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
Mr. Chair and Senator Fredrickson, maybe we ought to have Ms. Pontius from Senate Council take a look at that between now and the floor to see if there's issues here that she can ferret out. She's our civil law expert.
Okay. Mr. Appas, did you wish to make a quick comment?
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I represent Farm Credit Services, which would probably be affected by some of this. One quick comment, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fredrickson. Lien searches can also be conducted through the Secretary of State, so I think you'd just not specify where the lien search would be conducted. He wouldn't necessarily do it with the county recorder. A lien search would be conducted by the board, and the board shall include the name of the mortgagee on the indemnity check if they find that name, and typically they will. If they've gone through the process of looking... then they don't find it, then they shouldn't be held liable.
Oh.
So I think in that regard, that makes some sense.
Oh, Mr.
Betzel.
I guess I was misreading what the term check meant. Check doesn't mean a voucher. It means a review or something. Because I was reading the word check to mean, a piece of paper. What are we... Cause,
Senator Betzel, there's clearly a reference to a check.
But
in the common parlance.
But
there are a lot of definitions.
I thought check meant payment. That's why I made the motion. But in what Mr. Appas's testimony, apparently the check means a background review or looking at records. Is that the word?
No. Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, no. The indemnity is the check is a payment.
Okay.
It's not a...
Then I'm right. Okay.
The board goes and checks the UCC, and then if they issue a financial check, okay, that check would include both names.
Okay. Thank you. You'd use your background check, and I was just wondering if that was confusing there. Okay.
All right. We have Senator Fredrickson's motion in front of us.
Mr. Chairman, after the discussion with the observation from Mr. Oppitz, after county recorder, I would change my amendment and include the words our Secretary of State.
All right, we have that amendment in front of us. I understand that we want this reviewed by Ms. Pontius, if Mr. Watson can run that by her. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fredrickson.
On that same page, a small issue not related to paragraph B, but on page 19, line 26, where we say shows positive to any recognized test, I'd move to insert professionally between any and recognized.
Any recognized professional test?
Any professionally recognized.
Okay. All right, we have Senator Fredrickson's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I just have one other small one. On page 30, there's another report that's due by December. It says December 1st of 2007. I don't know the start dates of the 2008 session. I'm just wondering if the report needs to be that early when the session may not even start until February, maybe even March. I don't know what's involved in the report or who needs to see it. I'm just calling it to the party's attention that it should be delayed to give a more thorough report, but I don't know. I'm raising a question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, I think one of the reasons that December 1st was chosen, and it could actually even be earlier than that, one of the issues is going to be recommendations from the governor for the 2008 session and to have the report done sooner in case there are further recommendations the governor may want to include, but you can set the date whatever you want.
I'm not the one receiving it. I don't know. Thank you.
All right. Further questions, Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vickerman, this is sort of a basic question, but when we use prairie grasses to create biofuels, do we have to create different kinds of processing plants to make it? You can't use any of the ones we've already subsidized and built.
Yeah.
Mr. Kauf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, it does. There may be some processes that they're looking at right now to add on to existing ethanol facilities, but the material does have to be further processed to get the sugars to make the fuel. So there's definitely a more extensive process. I think the first ethanol plants that at about 15 million gallons was about $30 million per plant. These are estimated to cost quite a bit more than that when it's commercially available. There are some test plants. There's one in Iowa going on that they're working on right now. But it is a more extensive process to get the cellulosic material into a form that can produce biofuels.
And is it anticipated that if the grasses are more efficient, that eventually we would replace the existing plants in favor of the grasses, or is it envisioned that we would both have the ethanol plants using the materials we use today and then other plants that would use the grasses?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I think that is the goal is down the road that this would replace the current production from corn, although people understand that we're probably going to need corn for ethanol for quite a few more years. It as I understand it, it's more efficient in the net energy.
Yes.
That comes off the grasses, and that it's hopeful that the state will move down that direction to produce more net energy per acre. It's also anticipated that some of the production may come from existing plants that produce ethanol, but they'll need an add-on to further process the material to produce the ethanol, so that the existing plants could be eligible for payment as long as they're using cellulosic ethanol down the road.
And Mr. Chairman, my last question then, is it anticipated that these new plants that would need to be created for the grass-based fuels would need the kind of subsidy that the original ethanol plants needed to be built?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, that's the reason that Senator Kubley carried the Senate File 480 was because there is a concern that, again, they are much more, even more expensive than the original ethanol plants, and that they will need some kind of help in getting started for the first 10 years or so of development, and that's the kind of the theory behind those provisions being in the bill.
All right, Senator Fredrickson.
One other very small amendment, page 25, line 9, delete such. We're already making change in that section, so we might as well clean that up.
Mr. Watson? Did
we strike such.
Okay, we have the Fredrickson Amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, then, Mr. Bowden, did you?
I'll get us. Mr. Chairman, I can get a start on the riders in Article 2 quick while Mr. Bowden comes up here. Starting on page 31, lines 11, is the one-time rider for assessments under military affairs. Lines 31.18 is a base rider for a direct appropriation of the special revenue account for support of troops. Lines 31.23 is the Honor Guard rider. 31.26 is the rider for the $1.5 million for the reintegration programs. It's new. And 31.3 is the rider for the additional staffing, and that's also new money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that rider that's in there for $1.5 million, it says this is a one-time appropriation.
Right. We have an amendment to clean that up.
To make it an ongoing appropriation, Mr. Chairman?
No, not that one.
Not to make it ongoing, but we have, that's where the clean water language is going to come in.
I don't think there's a better.
But there was. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, yes, that is a one-time appropriation. This was what was requested by the in the governor's bill, and there is language on there saying it's available until spent. Right now, I guess they don't know exactly when they're going to expend this money. But are anticipating some amount of services that will be needed for the reintegration programs, depending on when the guards get or soldiers get back.
Sir Murphy, we're going to have to reflect that in the one-time money that we use.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, my point is that as long as we've got as many troops as we do in harm's way, $1.5 million, even though they're still trying to figure out how it's all going to get spent, is not going to be enough, even if it's an ongoing appropriation. And, Senator Vickerman and the committee did the best that they could do with the targets that were allowed to us and the one-time money, but, I see all this money flooding out towards other things, and it just doesn't seem like this is a very high priority. But I can tell you, as a matter of fact, that this $1.5 million isn't going to cover it, and especially after all the post-traumatic stress disorder starts kicking in, because that it's not like it's in the movies where all of a sudden the guy's flopping around like a crappie out of water, saying, oh, I've got something wrong with me. It's normally 5, 10, sometimes 20 or 30 years down the road. And, I don't know.
Senator Murphy.
It just doesn't seem like we've got our priorities in the right spot, Mr. Chairman. And that's not, a reflection against the Senator Vickerman or the work that the committee did or the work that this committee's doing. But it just doesn't seem like we've got our priorities in the right order, especially when we hear about even more reports coming out of the Minneapolis home or wherever it is about deficiencies that need to be upgraded. And, we continue to, give our veterans a little bit of lip service, and then as soon as we can, we turn our head and walk away. So it's frustrating, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy, I think your point's taken, although I think Senator Vickerman's bill does more than pay lip service to the veterans' concerns, but and I think maybe you were gone during some of the angst over the target setting that, because, for a couple of reasons, we ended up squeezing down most of the divisions and have made the targets very difficult.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know that because mine ended up being zero, which wasn't so bad. But,
I had negative.
It's just that these young men and women, even though they signed up for this duty, I don't believe that exactly what's going on in this day and age is, it, you know, that isn't exactly what they signed up for. And, you know, this is a much different thing than anybody's dealt with, even our Vietnam veterans. Long-term cost to society is only going to go up like on an escalator. It's going to go way up, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I I share your frustration, too, but we only have so much money that we can work with. But I want to ask Mr. Botten, there's more than the 1.5. There's other programs that they can use, so it gets way above that figure. Maybe you would you want to do that?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can step in and just run through the rest of the writers here. Picking up at the bottom of page 31, there's a short writer there, just provide additional staffing for the Department of Military Affairs related to the increased responsibilities they're going to have with these appropriations. Then the standard writer for the enlistment incentives, you'll see at the bottom of page 31 and top of page 32. Then moving to Veterans Affairs, there are a number of programs there that are designed to assist particularly veterans who are returning from recent active duty. At the top there, paragraph A, page 32, line 11, has the $750,000 a year for tribal veterans services offices. That's a new initiative designed similar to the county veterans services officers outreach to the veterans who are members of tribes. Then on paragraph B, there's a one-time appropriation to Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And underneath that is additional funding for the veterans outreach programs. Then paragraph D has $1 million added to the base for state soldiers assistance. That's one example of something that would be similar to reintegration funding, basically a very similar purpose there. Paragraph E provides additional funding for a program that was started this current biennium, the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Program. You'll see the cite to the statute there that establishes that. That's set up to run through fiscal year 2011. And then there's additional money at the bottom of page 32 for administration, again, related to all of the increased responsibilities for the department, given the number of new appropriations and additional funding. This rider also includes the language that's directed, that directs the creation of an ombudsman for residents and family members of residents at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Requires that ombudsman to attend meetings of the board and provide a report at each meeting on status, concerns, and issues. Then moving over to page 33, paragraph G has additional funding for information technology for the department. Standard rider, or there's an additional rider for funding for the State Veterans Cemetery in Little Falls. Then paragraph I is a continuation of a program that was established this biennium for grants to county veterans, service offices, and this all the language you see there is designed to make sure the grant program is administered in an orderly and competitive manner and that the money is distributed throughout the state. Moving over to page 34, paragraph I provides additional funding for the congressionally chartered veteran service organizations that provide services and outreach to veterans as well. Then paragraph K is a base rider that we've used in the past that appropriates money from the Support Our Troops plate revenues. And that's for grants to veteran service organizations and outreach to underserved veterans. Then at the bottom of page 34, you see the same rider that you saw in Article 1 providing compensation increases to the departments named in this article. And that's at the rate of 3.25% per year. Then finally, finishing up on page 35, there are a couple new sections of law. Section 6 is related to the World War II veteran license plates, and it takes money that's basically the state share of the cost for construction of the memorial have been completed, and it would allow remaining funds to be used for services and programs for veterans and their families. In particular, there are some plans for services and programs related to the dedication of the memorial. Then on Section 7, that's just the language relating to the eligibility for use of the honor guards at funerals for persons who served in the National Guard. That ties into the rider that we've discussed already. And that pretty much completes Article 2.
Okay. Questions about that article?
No. Well, Mr. Chairman, in regards to Section 6, Subdivision 6, it's not only the World War II plates, but we're carrying some language in our transportation bill for the Proud to be a Veteran plate, and there might be another one, too, where that money was all dedicated towards this World War II fund account, and we're changing all that so that it follows along and goes to these goes to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. So there'll be a little more money in there than just the World War II plates.
Right.
So it's not a lot, but it's what we could do.
Senator Betzel.
Just a clarification, Mr. Chair. The references to one-time money, both in this article and the previous ones, that is for the next biennium. We're not talking about the one-time money for this biennium. Is that correct?
It would be for this biennium.
So, Mr. Chair, could you describe the process by which the one-time money, because I had understood the guidance was that we were supposed to submit something separately
That's correct.
One-time bill.
What's happened is we've had some tails problems in this bill.
Okay.
And the amendment we're going to have right now, which I'll have Mr. Mossman go through, corrects some of it, not all of it, so that we've tried to bring this budget into accordance with our general fund target and our tails target, our ongoing target and our tails target. And so the bill we have is not totally perfect in that regard.
So, Mr. Chair, how are we going to be handling the one-time money overall in each individual bill? Or are we going to have a separate
bill? Well, I think, the hope or the instruction the Finance Committee received was to do it as a one-time bill.
Right.
And we're going to have to monitor the divisions. If this ends up being the only instance, we can probably handle it because it's within their target. But if we find these provisions go beyond the target, then we have to adjust, and that's what we're doing with at least one part of this bill. Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in regards to the one-time money, you know, and I understand the process and everything, I don't completely agree with it, but that's here nor there. But in regards to the one-time money, it sure seems like it dried up and went away, and then it wasn't available for anybody's. Where is all the one-time money?
Well, Senator Murphy, I think it was during the couple of days you were gone. But the instruction of the Finance Committee was to have a single bill with one-time money, separate from money that would be conveyed by this committee to the Capital Investment Committee. And so what I indicated to division chairs is that I'd work with them in promulgation of that, and we'd make a joint recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee as to how much we could allow to go to that committee for usage, and then have a single bill with one-time money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm still a little confused. We had X amount of dollars for one-time money, and I'm talking about all across the budgets, whether it was Senator Berglund's or whoever it was. We had all this one-time money, and then all of a sudden, now we don't.
No, in this instance, that's not correct. In fact, Mr. Mossman, you wanted to comment on.
Mr. Chair and members, I think what's going on, one of the reasons there's a number of one-time provisions in this bill is that the resources that are being used here are from the pool of money that has been considered to be ongoing. But because this bill includes policy choices that have in the ethanol area that have significant tails that were built into this bill, it effectively resulted in one-time money being created in 08-09 out of the ongoing money, if you will, in order to stay compliant with the tails in 10 and 11 to fund those provisions.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Mossman, which provisions in the ethanol, which provisions are we talking about here?
Mr. Chair and members, there's provisions in the bill that create new incentives for cellulosic biofuel development and provide for a bioenergy production incentive. And the bioenergy production incentive, just because of the lead time needed in that policy area, those costs don't the costs for the bioenergy production incentive begin in the fiscal 10 and 11 window, and the lead time needed for the other provisions results in a later initiation of that.
Thank you, Mr. Mossman. Senator Vickerman, we've been trying to move the ethanol debate and alternative fuels ahead in the Ag Committee. Unfortunately, it takes money to do that, and I don't know why we haven't attempted to tap the Renewable Development Fund. There always seems to be a little bit of extra money laying around there, so let's keep that one in our vest pocket. And last time I checked, they had like $10 million of unencumbered balance. I don't know. It might be less than that now. I know that Senator Kubley would like to get his hands on some of that. But
Mr. Chair,
Anyway, Mr. Chair, my discussion was around the one-time money and the money that this billion, mythical billion dollars that we had in one-time money that seems like nobody is, I understand that we've got some of it in this bill, but it sure seemed like there was $1 billion of one-time money and we were going to do some things for it, and now all of a sudden there's not $1 billion. So I don't know who's hiding the money, but.
Senator Murphy, I don't think it's a question of hiding the money. I think the request was that most of the money be put in the budget reserve. So it's not a question of hiding the money. The request was made to put $629 million in the budget reserve, and that left a balance of $384 million. And then, depending on how much money is conveyed by this committee to the Capital Investment Committee for capital purposes using cash, the balance would be left to this committee. Now, Senator Lang says, and I don't know, given the parameters that we can meet his request is for $160 million of the $384.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at least we're buying something.
Mr. Chair, I'd like Professor. To move, should I? I'll move the A1 amendment.
Okay, if we could have that distributed.
We have it.
Why has it? Okay. And Mr. Mossman, do you want to go through the amendment? Or Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, I'll tackle the amendment here. It's most of the amendment is just changing all the numbers in the bill to reflect taking out the clean water appropriations that were within the Department of Ag. So that is lines 1.2 through 1.13 of the bill. Just adjust all the totals for that. Lines 1.14 through 1.17, for the most part, delete some of the language in the bill directing the Department of Ag to spend a certain amount of ag fund money on pesticide or monitoring pesticides in their groundwater. Finance and some other people thought it looked too much like a direct appropriation, so we're just requesting that they continue to monitor pesticides in groundwater. So we're just changing that language. Again, lines 1.18 through 1.21 also deal with the clean water, deleting that. Line 1.22, Senator Stump, we'll note that this is where we changed the 250 to 250,000 for the turf seed council. Lines 1.23, we just clarifying one of the appropriations and we delete transfer and make it to a grant for one of the appropriations. Lines 1.24 and 1.25 deal with the ethanol payments, and it's just clarifying the way the capped open appropriation is will work. Then the last two lines, it's dealing with one of the appropriations in the veterans part of the bill, and it's just they had some language saying that money could be used until spent, and that maybe isn't really necessary for ongoing base appropriation. So for the most part, it takes out the clean water appropriations, and this makes a couple of technical changes.
And as indicated, then, the clean water will be carried within recommendations from Senator Anderson's committee, probably then carried in the one-time bill we're talking about with whatever appropriate language is needed. Right. Questions on the amendment? Okay, Senator Betzold moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then, members, I think we have one other amendment that I'm aware of, the A3 amendment. That could be distributed. And as it's being distributed, the ethanol section, and Senator Frederickson talked to you about that earlier, the ethanol section makes a reference to payments of $27 million. The ongoing payments now are $15 million a year. It's a little bit more than that. So this amendment rounds it off to what are the ongoing payments. It doesn't prevent any larger appropriation 4 years from now. This does not deal with the ongoing, the current appropriation, nor the appropriation of the tails, but deals with the second generation of ethanol and allows us to make sure that manufacturers, producers know that there's a continued commitment from the state of Minnesota, but it at least allows us to do it in the context of where we are right now. Obviously, there's nothing this legislature can do to bind a further legislature, whether it be to reduce the appropriation to zero or triple it. But this allows us to have a little bit more control. And Senator Kubley, I don't know, did you wish to address the amendment at all? I mean, this is your section of the bill. Is there anything you...
I think it's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Senator Betzel moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Is there any debate or questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments or discussion?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate file number 1925 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Okay. On Senator Frederickson's motion, Senator Betzel.
Just a clarification, Mr. Chair. You had indicated some concern about some tails issues or whatever. Have they been resolved now? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
They have been.
That was done in the A1 amendment that you offered.
Gotcha. I just want to make sure. Thank you.
All right. We have Senator Frederickson's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Vickerman and staff for all your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
And meeting's adjourned.
Okay.